Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And in this Word Magazine, I want to do something a little bit different. I want to share with you some of my experiences from a rather recent visit that I made to the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. I live in Central Virginia. It's about a two-hour drive up to D.C. And last month, I went for the first time to the Museum of the Bible. I don't know why it took me so long to make the trip up there. And I went and I had wanted perhaps to write a blog post about it or do a podcast about it. And the weeks just have gone by. But I thought, at least I'll do it today. I really should have done it sooner when my thoughts and the experience was a lot fresher in my mind, but I'm going to do it now. I had a birthday early in February, and I have two daughters who live in the Metro DC area, both young professionals working up there. And so for my birthday, they gave me a ticket to go to the Museum of the Bible, and they planned a day for the three of us, just me and my two daughters, to spend the day together at the Museum of the Bible. Great idea. So I went up there on February the 15th on President's Day, and I got to spend the day with my daughters, and I got to go to the Museum of the Bible. So it was an interesting father-daughter type of day. And we had a fun time looking at the exhibits. They're both very interesting conversation partners. And for years and years, we've been doing things like reading books and watching movies and visiting places and then having, you know, long conversations about those things as one sometimes does. And so we had a fun time going through the museum together and then analyzing it together. And again, I wish that I had sat down with them the day after or the day of and recorded something, because I think my thoughts would have been a lot fresher. But again, hopefully it'll be helpful to do it now. So I just jotted down a few of my observations, something like 10 observations that also is just sort of track our journey through visiting the Bible Museum in DC. And I've got a few pictures in a slideshow that I'll show towards the end. So here are just 10 sort of observations on our pilgrimage going through the Museum of the Bible in Washington, DC. First observation, the building itself where the Museum of the Bible is housed in Washington, DC is very impressive. It's in a prime location. It's just two blocks off the National Mall. You've got the Capitol building within view from the upper floor of the building. And so it's an amazing location within Washington, D.C. The entrance to the museum has this massive artwork that is called the Gutenberg Gates by an artist named Larry Kirkland. And it presents 80 lines in huge form from the Latin Genesis from the Gutenberg Bible, the first book printed. The Museum of the Bible was initiated and funded by the Green family, the family that owns the Hobby Lobby craft stores. And so we could say it was the house that scrap booking built, or the house that ceramics built, or something like that. The museum opened in 2017, and it was in the news quite a bit around that time. And initially, the museum was free to the public. And again, I wanted to go during that time and never made the trip up there. Starting, I think, about a year after they had opened in 2018 or so, they started charging. And I think the tickets were, I didn't get them, my daughters did, but I think they're about $20 or $25 a person for admittance. The building itself, again, is an amazing place. From what I read, the Green family spent about $500 million, $500 million refurbishing the building and creating the museum. And I guess probably that might have been acquiring the things that are within it that they didn't already have in their family collection. So it's a building that used to be the old Washington Design Center, but they have, very beautifully rehabbed the building. So it's an amazing thing just to look at the building. Second observation, the crowd on the day we went was very sparse. There were not very many people there. It was a holiday and there was not a lot of traffic into DC. It was a good day for us to go. It was sad to go into DC and see so many things close, as things are in these COVID days, and to see the National Guard troops that were there for the faux uprising that supposedly took place. And now political capital has been gained to have these soldiers in our nation's capital. So that was kind of sad to see. And I'm sure that the museum, like probably businesses and other things within DC, have suffered because so many things are closed down. I mean, so many people come to DC to see the various sites and the monuments and the museums, and with COVID and now with the aftermath of the election, so many things are closed down. There weren't a lot of people there. And in fact, sometimes it felt like there were more people working at the museum than there were people there looking at the exhibits. So we pretty much had the place to ourselves. I wouldn't guess that there were more than a couple of hundred people, and that might even be generous, who were there throughout the day while we were there at the Museum of the Bible. Third observation, the museum covers some 6 floors. Again, it's a massive space, and big wide space, big wide staircase. In one of the places spanning, I think, 2 floors, there's a huge, massive Tiffany stained glass window depicting the 4 evangelists that can be viewed from the stairwell. And so that was pretty amazing. Fourthly, in this 10-step process through the journey, we started off by going to an exhibit that was called Walk Through the Hebrew Bible on the 3rd floor. And again, we're just kind of stumbling in. We didn't know a lot about it. And this is kind of one of the first things we came to. And so we just went into it. And it ended up being a kind of a multimedia tour of the story of the Hebrew Bible. Sort of not really the story of the creation of the Hebrew Bible, but the stories within the Hebrew Bible. And so it sort of begins at creation and goes to the end of the Old Testament, the exile and the restoration. It's about a maybe 25-minute experience where you go through and you go from room to room. And again, there are a lot of lights and media projection on the walls. And it was a bit cheesy and weird, but it was enjoyable. I thought, somebody who maybe doesn't know anything about the Bible, or maybe children, it might be an interesting thing to walk through. It's sort of an overload on the visual in telling the stories. One of the things I thought was interesting about it, though, in reflection, my daughters and I were chatting about this, was it really attempted just to tell the Old Testament story, not as, let's say, as seen from the Christian perspective. It's simply a Jewish person could go through this and not think of its connection, the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament's connection necessarily to the New Testament. So it doesn't show the temple and say, this reminds me of how Jesus is the temple or something like that. It's very much focused simply on the Old Testament and not as seen through Christian eyes, we might say. At one point, you walk through the Red Sea. Again, it's a bit cheesy, but also kind of interesting too. One of the things about the museum that I read about on some of their information is it stresses that it's non-sectarian. And maybe that's why this multimedia presentation on the Old Testament didn't really come at it from a Christian theological perspective. Fifth, on this 10-point walk through my visit to the Museum of the Bible, we went next to, on the fourth floor, an exhibit that's called The History of the Bible. And we spent most of our time there. In fact, this is probably really the crown jewel of the museum. According to the museum literature on this floor in this exhibit, there are over 600 artifacts that I think were part of the Green family collection and have been expanded and added to. There are more than 50 media programs, videos, and other interactive sort of computer things that you can work with within this exhibit. It begins with the ancient Near East and talking about the backgrounds for the Hebrew Bible. I've been blessed to be able to travel to a lot of places and see a lot of interesting things in my life. I've been to, the British Museum in London and seen lots of firsthand some major artifacts. Within this exhibit, there are lots of replicas. Like there's a replica of the Rosetta Stone, which is in the British Museum, which was key for breaking the code on understanding early Egyptian writing, the hieroglyphics, because it was in there in hieroglyphics and there in Greek. And so when they discovered this, they could use the Greek as a key to decode the hieroglyphics. The Rosetta Stone's not there at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, but there's a nice replica of it. There's a replica of other things. I know something, image that I've used in my Survey of the Old Testament class that I teach, but I've never seen it firsthand, and I didn't see it firsthand at the Museum of the Bible. And I saw a replica of it, the Merneptah Stela. The original is in Cairo in Egypt, but it's the stela that has the first written mention of Israel. So that was interesting. There's also an exhibit within this on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And if you've been keeping up with the news, you know that the Museum of the Bible bought some forged Dead Sea Scroll materials, and they were in the news and in sort of a negative light for having bought these things or been duped into buying these things. It's interesting though, they sort of tried to turn, maybe it's kind of a life gives you lemons, make lemonades in the exhibit they talked about. Here, we bought these documents that weren't authentic, and how do people forge documents, and how can you tell if a document is authentic? So they have a little segment on that, trying to turn something that was negative into something positive. And then as you walk through the visit, through the exhibit rather, there's a lot of media, whether good or bad, I don't know. But one of the things that was kind of interesting was they had these films at different places, and it was called Drive Through the Bible. And there was this presenter, and he had, in whatever place he was in, he would have some vintage automobile from the place. Like it was in Israel, he had a vintage Jeep, and he takes you to various sites like the synagogue in Capernaum, the ruins of that. In Italy, he drives around in Alfa Romeo and other places, similar shtick with a vintage car. But it was kind of interesting. And somebody was telling me, apparently, those videos that drive through the Bible or drive through history is used by a lot of homeschoolers. I'd never heard of it before, but it was interesting to watch that throughout this kind of on this fourth floor. It's kind of the whole fourth floor, massive exhibit. After we walked through the kind of ancient Near Eastern and Hebrew Bible, you sort of transition into the New Testament, and it talks about the formation of the New Testament and then early translations, talks about the Latin Vulgate and Jerome. And there are these multimedia screens where they had actors and it filmed them, one portraying Jerome and actually using a lot of quotations from Jerome and later on Erasmus and Tyndale and Luther and so forth. It was kind of interesting. But within the New Testament part, then you start getting, not replicas, but some of the real things, which I found most interesting, of course. So they had things like a 1516 copy of the first edition of Erasmus's Greek New Testament. They had, first editions or the originals of many ancient printed editions of the Greek New Testament, of the Complutensian Polyglot, and then as then early translations into various vernacular languages. And there was a big section on the translation of the Bible into English with portions from Tyndale and then from other early English Bibles. And then especially there's a lot of attention given to the King James Version. There's a reproduction of a printing press that's within this section. And one of my daughters is a graphic designer and an artist. And so I think she enjoyed that part of the exhibit. She enjoys understanding, learning about print culture. And so that was an interesting part. At the very end of this exhibit on the history of the Bible, in a display case, they have the Nesselelan 28th edition, the most current printed modern critical Greek handbook, sort of as the end of this process or the state of the art. And then beyond that, there's a room that is dedicated to the translation of the Bible, and they have sample print copies of the Bible in all the languages in which it's been translated. And then they also have spaces for languages in which there are currently translations in process, maybe some in which only a book has been done or just the New Testament. And then they also have some languages at this point, I think in history, obviously most modern major modern languages, their interpretation of the Bible, but there are very many small people groups where they don't yet have portions of the scriptures translated into their heart language. And so it's sort of dedicated to the Bible was translated, is still being translated. And that was interesting as well. So again, we spent the bulk of our time there. After, you know, if you've ever been to a museum, after a while, there's kind of like only so much you can take of reading and seeing things. And so we took a break and we went down to a little cafe that they have. It's called the Milk and Honey Cafe. We had lunch and we visited the bookstore that they have. It's an interesting bookstore. There are lots of like souvenir type things. But interestingly enough, then on the bookshelf, the actual books they were selling, they were primarily sort of modern academic type books. So I wish I'd taken a picture of it. I didn't get a chance to, but I jotted down some of the things that were there. Like they had a lot of Metzger there. They had Metzger's book on the early versions, which was pretty pricey. They had Metzger's book on canon that was there. They had Michael Holmes's text and translation of the Apostolic Fathers there. They had Peter J. Williams' Can We Trust the Gospels, which I recently did a review of, but that was for sale there in the bookstore. And they had David Trobisch's book, the first edition of the New Testament. And that was interesting because David Trobisch, who was a German-American scholar, was the curator of the Green Family Collection, their Bible collection. And he was the director of collections for the Museum of the Bible from 2014 to 2018. So he really established the collection that's there at the Museum of the Bible. Apparently he's not the director of collections any longer, but you know, he has a degree, I think, from Heidelberg, is, you know, very much a mainstream modern academic text critic. So it was interesting to see his book there and to see his influence on the museum. We also, like I said, we had a good time over lunch, taking a little break, talking about what we had seen in the presentations, particularly in the exhibit on the history of the Bible. And I was telling my girls that it was interesting to me that, you know, everything was presented as the Bible is a historical book. It's a historical artifact. Here's all the archaeology. Here are the historical struggles to determine the Bible, whether in the original languages, whether in translations and so forth. And I asked them, I said, what was missing from that presentation? And I suggested that what was missing was a theological understanding of the Bible. And again, the museum claims to be non-sectarian, so maybe it's not surprising, but there was nothing in the collection about the inspiration of the Bible. There was nothing in there about the self-authentication of the Bible. There was nothing about the providential preservation of the Bible. It was all presented, we might say, in a human-centered type of manner. Hey, I'm not condemning them necessarily for that, but it is something of interest to observe about the Museum of the Bible. Moving on, point seven in this tour. After lunch, we went to the sixth floor promenade to see a view of the Capitol. That was an interesting view. A lot on that floor seemed to be closed. The theater was closed. The restaurant was closed. Maybe that's because of low activity due to COVID. Then we went to the fifth floor to see the exhibit from the Israel Antiquities Authority. And so that's a standing exhibit they have that the government of Israel has loaned them, or this Antiquities Authority has loaned them various artifacts related to the Hebrew Bible and to the Old Testament. But we went there and saw many things that have been dug up from various archaeological digs. And so it was interesting to see that. Then point nine, we went back to the third floor and we viewed a 12-minute animated film that was sort of the counterpart to the walk through the Hebrew Bible. This was supposed to give an overview of the New Testament and what was important about the life of Jesus and then the apostles. And so it's kind of a walk through the New Testament. It's kind of an interesting film. Again, it was animated. I don't know, my daughters and I were talking about it. You know, maybe the digital age has ruined museums. I mean, after when you realize you could sit at home or pick up your phone and watch a YouTube video or whatever, going into a museum and sitting down and watching a screen just doesn't seem, that compelling. And so we could say the internet has killed museums. But I guess it was something you could only view there. It's not available online. But I don't know. It was okay. And then also on that floor, there was another exhibit there that we hadn't gone to. And it was called The World of Jesus, where it was supposed to be a recreation. I don't know if it was supposed to be Nazareth or a Galilean village. And one of my daughters said, once you've gone to some of these churches that have these really complex nativity scenes, like there's a church near us that has a Bethlehem village every couple of years, she said, this really wasn't all that impressive. And it was, again, it was quite empty. And we're sort of walking through it pretty much by ourselves. And there were a handful of people working there. Like I said, at times they outnumbered us. After that, we went back to the second floor and we walked through an exhibit that's called The Bible in America. And this was sort of a Bible-centered overview of American history, showing how the Bible and how people made use of the Bible at various points in American history. So there's a big exhibit on Whitfield's preaching and the awakening in the colonial America. And then there was one interesting film where there were two actors, film of two actors where they were reading quotations from John Adams and Thomas Jefferson on the Bible. And so that was kind of interesting. There was a lot about slavery, a lot about civil rights. And then from the Bible in America, it sort of transitioned into another wing on the Bible in the world. And here, I don't know, it got to be a bit of a mishmash, sort of saying the Bible is important, the Bible is important. Here, there were scientists who studied the Bible. Oh, look, there are humanitarians who are influenced by the Bible. And you, kind of a, almost a perfunctory, if it's an evangelical Influence Institution. They got to have something about Habitat for Humanity. And here's how the Bible influenced families. Here's how the Bible influenced education. Here's how many people's family and first names come from Bible names, this sort of thing. There was even a section on the Bible and fashion. And apparently they've had fashion shows at the Bible Museum where people wear clothing that supposedly have scenes from the Bible. So it got to be a little weird, I guess, at that point. It was a bit strange, but we walked through it and we were taking it all in, and it made for a lots of interesting conversation as we walked through. Lastly, as our time was running out, there is an exhibit on the first floor, I think it's a visiting exhibit that is from the Vatican Museum and from the Vatican Library. And so we walked through that and looked at that. So you've got everything within this. You've got Protestant evangelicalism, you've got a Vatican exhibit, you've got Israel Antiquity Authority. So it's kind of a combination of lots of different things. So we were there. Let me draw things to a close. We were there. We got there about 11 o'clock in the morning. And we stayed till it closed at 5 o'clock. So we were there for 6 solid hours. So we walked through that place, and I think we saw just about everything that was open to us. Now we certainly didn't look at every exhibit or read every placard that gave some description. Like I said, you have a little bit of museum fatigue after a while. But we definitely walked through everything, at least, that was there and eyeballed it, windshield view of everything, and a closer view at some things. Would I recommend going to the Museum of the Bible in D.C.? Sure. I think if you've got the time and interest, if you're a Christian and you enjoy the Bible and the history of the Bible, I think it'll be well worth your time to go there and take a look. Reflecting on it, it is a bit of a strange mixture of, on one hand, sort of you see the influence of evangelicalism, and I think the Green family is an evangelical family. But on the other hand, when it came to putting together this museum, they went to David Trobisch, and they went to other sort of mainstream academic historians and scholars. And so it's a strange mixture of, on one hand, It's not crazy evangelical. It's not a Six Flags Over Jesus sort of thing, but it's got a lot of evangelical spirit to it. But then it's also wedded to this an academic approach to the Bible. So it was a kind of a strange mixture. I wonder, why did the Greens want to do this museum? Why did they want to place this museum within 2 blocks of the US Capitol? I think certainly they wanted to show the importance of the Bible, the importance of the Bible in our country. But on the other hand, it's presented in a very non-sectarian, non-theological manner. So before I forget about it, let me pull up real quickly the PowerPoint that I created that just has a few pictures on it. Let's see. Yeah. Of course, you can look things up for yourself online, but here's just a few pictures. Again, there on the left of the screen is the exterior of this building. It's an amazing building that, again, they refurbished with $500 million. There's the entrance. The Gutenberg gates there. It's an amazing piece of artwork there. And then again, some of these pictures, by the way, I took some of them. I just grabbed from online. I didn't do a great job of taking pictures while I was there. There on the left is the main stairway, and it was about that empty when we were there. On the right is a picture I took, and that's the Tiffany stained glass windows of the four evangelists. I think it dated to about 1905, was taken out of a church in New Jersey. On the left is not, again, not a picture I took, but one I found online of two kids Don't know who those kids are, but this is the part of that walk through the Bible where it was walking through the Red Sea. And again, it's sort of this, you know, visual experience as you walk through. On the right, then, is more the kind of stuff I was interested in seeing and I spent most of the time looking at. And this is one of Rasmus's 1516, first edition of the printed Greek New Testament that also had his Latin translation. And so that was interesting to see firsthand. And again, these were more the things I was interested in. On the left is a copy of the Complutensian Polyglot from 1522. And on the right is Beza's second edition of his Greek New Testament from 1582 is there on the right. But there were lots of choice printed editions of the Bible in original languages and in translations that were there. And it was interesting to look at those. There we are. There I am with my two daughters. And this is from the top promenade, looking at the Capitol building in the background. And these are some of the extra exhibits. There's the Bible in America. There's the Thomas Jefferson, John Adams screen where the two actors were reading. And this is kind of the cheesy statues of scientists. See, even scientists read the Bible. And oddly enough, they had some scientists who were there who I'm not sure, like Newton was not a Christian. He was probably a Unitarian at best, but he's there. See, men of science read the Bible. So again, it got kind of weird in that section. This is from the very end. This is a facsimile. It's not the original, but I thought it was an interesting book. It's a facsimile that's in the Vatican collection called the Lorsch Gospels. And it's an illuminated manuscript. And I liked the image there on the right, because I had been talking in one of my classes with my students about how in later art, the four evangelists were depicted with various symbols: Matthew, the winged man; Mark, the winged lion; Luke, the winged ox; and John, the eagle. And you can see that in the corners, are prominently in the corners there around this circle in the Lorsch Gospels. So I grabbed some pictures from the exhibits that I'll be able to use maybe in some of my teaching. So it was an interesting trip. Again, that kind of summarizes my trip to the Museum of the Bible. Interesting. I had an enjoyable time. Had an enjoyable time with my daughters. Again, strange mixture, evangelicalism and mainstream academic scholarship of the Bible. Again, what was the purpose? Why did the Greens want to do this? I think they wanted to make a statement that the Christianity and the Bible influenced America. Yes, the Bible did influence America. Maybe what the exhibit doesn't say is that it was European Protestantism that influenced the founding of our country. I'm not sure that perspective was really stressed or emphasized. And it also doesn't really address what are the dangers of a country where Christianity, for Protestant Christianity, European influence, Protestant Christianity has less of an influence within our culture and society, and therefore the Bible, a biblical worldview, has less of an influence in society. I'm not sure that was ever really acknowledged, but it'd be interesting to see if they would ever have an exhibit that would focus on something like that. So anyways, that's my summary of my visit to the Museum of the Bible. This is a little bit different type of Word Magazine. I hope this has been enjoyable and interesting for those who are listening. And I will look forward to speaking to you in the next Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.